The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And if you think you hear the mess around, you're making a big mistake, because you're going to find out the hard way.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates radio show, the Hump Day Edition. We got a fine guest joining us right now, live via phone. My co-devil, at least for the moment, he is John Nichols from The Nation. John, welcome back to the big show.
Dude, you know, did you hear the intro music there?
I did. Is that your request?
The hard way? Yeah. Well, I'm a Kinks guy, man. I love that song, The Hard Way. Great guitar riff as always for Davey. And visual. Oh, perfect.
John, I got to tell you, I lived my entire life the hard way.
I know you have. I can tell. You look it.
Hey, buddy, I gotta turn our attention, at least momentarily, towards our backyard. Do you see the latest at the Journal Sentinel? The gloves are coming off. Kevin Nicholson, who ran for U.S. Senate, and once upon a time, I thought the guy was a Democrat, right?
Stop.
Okay.
You didn't think the guy was a Democrat. He was the head of the Young Democrats. He appeared at the Democratic National Convention. He was like a full-on Democrat.
Well, that gave me the impression he was a Democrat, John.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
The fact that his parents maxed out to Tammy Baldwin gave me the impression that he was raised in a Democratic family.
Yeah, they don't back him.
No.
they don't back their own kid.
Well, you know who he's not backing? The Republican lieutenant gubernatorial, former LT. She's now a gubernatorial candidate. Rebecca Clayfish, the one that jumped in full Trumpster. Well, this weekend, she talked about, you know, asked everyone to turn off the recorders while she threw a little corruption out there for people's consideration.
Mm-hmm.
And she
mm-hmm.
went through this whole rigmarole and said, you know, we got to take off the gloves and we're going to have to do some ballot harvesting, hire some mercenaries. And today, and it would appear as if Mr. Nicholson, who apparently is going to run for something, maybe he's kind of honing down his direction towards the gubernatorial race. But Nicholson called her, Rebecca Clayfish, as dumb as a bag of hammers. That's got to sting a little, John.
Yeah, especially for the hammers. I know Rebecca Clayfish, and she's not all that stupid. I mean, that's an important thing to understand. I actually think I've always thought, you know, on a ticket with her and Scott Walker, she was the smart one. But the thing to understand is she did perhaps the dumbest thing I have ever seen in politics. It's kind of amazing. Now, it's not the thing about, you know, the malfeasance or the lawlessness. That's typical Republican. In fact, I think that's actually now a requirement to get a Republican nomination, that you're in favor of doing awful stuff to steal an election. It's the thinking it's a good idea before you lay out your strategy of malfeasance and lawlessness to say, okay, anybody that's recording, turn off your device now because I'm going to give you my strategy. I mean, that's the bag of hammers statement right there. Because anybody who does that, what are you going to do? If you're there, first off, if you're a tracker, if you're one of these people that follows candidates to hear them, see them do dumb things, right?
And the Democratic Party's well-resourced. I got to think somebody's out tracking Rebecca Clayfish at this point.
It's not beneath it. The Democratic Party's not beneath that, you know? Okay. So if you're a tracker and somebody says, turn off your recorders now, what's your move, right? Your move is to actually make sure your recorder is on.
Time for the close-up.
Exactly. Move a little closer to the stage. And if you weren't even considering recording, if you were just like, hanging around, you're like somebody who popped in for the hell of it. Now, why anyone would do that in Door County, pop in to a Rebecca Clayfish event for the hell of it, I don't know. But if you're there, wouldn't that be a cue for you to think, maybe I should record this? So the bottom line was she did the ask, basically. She said, you know, hey, I take this down. Get this information because I am about to say something that's a big, big deal, right? That this is kind of the heart of the whole thing. And then what she says is, we're going to do the things that for the last several years Donald Trump has been saying is the most corrupt, awful stuff in the history of politics, right? Bottom line is she showed herself to be so politically inept that I think she came, I don't know if it's, we'll see where it ends up, but I think she's come very close to disqualifying herself as a candidate for governor. And remember, in the current Republican Party, you don't disqualify yourself by doing things that are lawless or irresponsible or crude or anti-democratic or destructive to the American experiment. You disqualify yourself by appearing so inept that you couldn't succeed in doing those things. And so I do believe that at this point, she has pretty well guaranteed that she will face a serious primary challenge, whether it comes from Nicholson, who is frankly no hero. Let's be clear of that. You know, he's been angling to run for something forever. And, you know, so he didn't really care about Rebecca Clayfish one way or the other. He just is looking, he's looking for people to start to talk to him, talk to, about him as a gubernatorial candidate, which is what we're doing. So he succeeded in that regard. But I would also keep an eye on Sean Duffy, who apparently has President Trump's, former president.
Run, Sean, run, Trump said recently of Duffy, the former real world. And what? He was a log rolling champion of some sort, an athlete, if you will, John.
Now, I didn't watch The Real World as much as I should have, but did he appear naked in that show ever?
I'm less clear, John. You know, less clear, but Dominic used to appear naked on the radio constantly. We never held that against him.
No, I don't hold it against him. I you know, I just think that's a tidbit that goes into the, you know, it's like in the debate with Tony Evers, right? You know, it's like Evers would say, well, I've never appeared naked on television. And then Duffy would say, I don't know.
You know, if I was Tony Evers, I would not use that line because I'd be afraid it'd hurled back against me. Nor would anyone ever want you to, Tony. You know,
yeah, right, of course. But
bum bum.
But okay. But bum bum there. But then in a debate with Rebecca Clayfish, didn't she just over the weekend say that after breaking the law, or apparently breaking the law, at least doing whatever it is, whatever kind of malfeasance.
Little campaign corruption between friends.
Yeah, yeah, corruption, blah, blah, blah. Then she said she'd have to shower with steel wool.
Well, I know that's Joel quote, quite man. Well, and I suspect that's always been sort of her hygiene method.
No, I don't believe that. I disagree. I think you're wrong. And but what I'm telling you is we have entered the weird zone here of our politics, right?
It's not enough to feel bad about your corruption and promise if elected you'd scrub hard and then go reform everything, John. That's not how you redeem oneself.
I just don't think that's the way to go. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to be that when the discussion between two esteemed commentators such as ourselves has degenerated to the point where we're talking about taking showers with steel wool and whether some guy appeared naked on The Real World. I mean, boy, I got to tell you, we're a long way from Warren Knowles and Pat Lucy.
We've got our crack production staff working on that one, John. John Nichols from The Nation, my fine code devil, for the rest of this big hour. John, there is a gubernatorial race happening in the state of Virginia. Terry McAuliffe, and I've met him. I saw him at the DNC in 2016. He's the consummate Hillary Party insider, to my opinion, or at least I think he's cast as such. And then there's...
He looks like every fundraiser you've ever met.
And then there's Youngkin. There's this, you know, like Trump before he distanced himself from Trump. But the dynamic of that race, my understanding is effectively the state of Virginia elects the candidate of the team out of office. So every time for, you know, a number of years, effectively, if a Democrat won the White House, a Republican would win the governor's mansion, and they elect that person the very next year. So, John, history would dictate that Youngkin's got the inside track, but the way I hear it being told is if Terry McAuliffe doesn't win, well, this is a harbinger of a landslide in the midterms. Wondered if you had an opinion, sir.
I got an opinion that you're trying your best to explain Terry McAuliffe's difficult situation. But the reality is, it's bad, man. Virginia has become pretty much a blue state. It voted by 10 points for Joe Biden. It's got two Democratic senators. It's elected Democrats to every statewide office in the last couple of cycles. So by and large, I mean, you have to look at Virginia as a state where Democrats have done pretty well. If McAuliffe loses, while you are correct that there's sort of this off-year curse, this midterm curse, and it's practical to say what you're saying, the reality is if McAuliffe loses, that ain't going to be good for the Democrats. There's no way to explain around it. And the only hopeful thing they've got is it looks like Phil Murphy's probably going to win up in New Jersey, which is actually a similar state with a, you know, place where Republicans have done very well in the governor in the gubernatorial races. And so I don't think you write things off for the Democrats if McAuliffe loses, but I do think you have to be conscious that this is not a good circumstance, and it does reflect kind of a drop off of enthusiasm that the Democrats are going to have to deal with.
John, were you surprised at all to see the former president, Barack Obama, out there on the campaign trail for McAuliffe? I believe the current president, Joe Biden, had positive things to say about McAuliffe last night. And in no small part, I got the sense that Joe Biden was trying to, what, antagonize Trump into coming out and
yes,
endorsing yes. Youngkin more publicly, putting himself on the ballot in Virginia. What do you think about the strategy of the former president, the current president, going out there and putting their reputations behind Terry McAuliffe?
Well, I tell you, I think that's exactly what's going on. And I think that the state of Virginia is about a 54-55% anti-Trump state, right? That's the basic numbers you got there. And so if you can make this a race between Trump and Terry McAuliffe's got a really good chance of winning that. And so I think that's what Biden's up to. I think that's what Barack Obama's been up to. I think that's what McAuliffe is up to. They're trying to wrap Trump around Youngkin. And Youngkin deserves it. I mean, he's clearly aligned with Trump on a lot of issues. And more than that, he's accepted Trump's endorsement. It's no lie there to suggest it. But Youngkin has done a very sly job of presenting himself as suburban dad. You know, he wears like sort of the loose sweater and the khaki pants, and he's kind of easygoing and self-deprecating, and he's kind of the opposite of Trump in every way, personality-wise, style-wise. And so he's gotten a lot of traction there with that. And he's also exploiting these school issues in some really cynical, pretty dark ways. And so he's viable. We have to accept that he's viable. And I, again, in the shorthand of our politics, I think that Joe Biden is smart enough to go in there and, you know, try and stir it up, make it a referendum on Trump and Trumpism. And if Trump fights for it, and I'm sure right now, I guarantee you down at Mar-a-Lago right now, there's like four aides holding Trump back.
Oh, he's already.
Do not go to Richmond. Don't go to Richmond.
No, he's got a statement out at this hour, John. Here it is. Chanting, we love Trump in Arlington, Virginia. Thank you, Arlington. See you soon. Trump said in a brief statement shared by his spokeswoman, Liz Harrington, on Twitter. Of course, John had to share it through a spokeswoman because he doesn't have a Twitter account. Come back with us. John Nichols helping me co-devil through this big hour. You know, maybe we got time for calls. We'll see. 844-967-2789. More with me and John. Come back with us, please.
It takes to win,
but nobody likes me,
and they're the ones writing it off.
The
The Devil's Advocates, so relevant they have one foot in tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Got a fine cool devil, at least for a few more minutes. He is John Nichols from The Nation magazine. John, thanks for sticking around.
Here to serve.
Well, you serve with dignified excellence, sir.
Dignity.
Let me ask you, the deal or the lack thereof, the infrastructure deal, man, I'm tired of talking about it. John, you know, can't tax the rich, can't help the poor. You know, we as Democrats, we talk about delivering for the American people, but, you know, we get a watered down version of our more preferred bill. First and foremost, sir, do you think we're going to get a infrastructure deal today or before Joe gets on the plane or someday soon? And B, will it be something less than satisfactory?
No and yes.
So that's no deal or no deal before Joe leaves?
No deal before he leaves, I suspect. Because I heard Jen Psaki, who's got, you know, on a day like this, probably the toughest job in the country, right? Everybody wants to know where the deal is at. And they only want to know one thing. Is it there or isn't it there? And she's got to say, as she did this afternoon, you know, the Europeans don't care whether this deal is done before he gets on the plane. And this is quoted from her. They're sophisticated, right? And I'm like, okay, yeah.
It's like, but John,
Macron and Merkel are going to say, yeah, it's cool. You don't have a plan, and you don't have a climate plan within that plan, but you're here at the summit to tell us how we're going to beat climate change. No, it's a bad situation.
Well, and not only that, and, John, we talked about the electoral race in Virginia. It'd be nice to deliver, Democrats delivering, let's say, for Terry McAuliffe, because Terry's hoping to deliver at the ballot box on Tuesday.
That's exactly right. You know, look, what's developing is a problematic thing for Biden, and he's got to deal with this. I think he's capable of dealing with it, and I think the people around him are capable of dealing with it. But this is no small measure. They need to get something together quickly, and it has to be good enough that people actually notice it. Two separate factors. Can't just pull something across the line, because then you could have done that infrastructure bill, you know, last summer, right? The core infrastructure bill. You got to have the domestic spending, the social policy component as well. It's got to be substantial enough that people say, well, that's a pretty big deal. It's not everything, but it counts. The problem is that, as best I can understand it at this point, you know, we went from folks saying we need a $6 trillion plan down to a $3.5 trillion, down to a $2. Now we're maybe, I don't know, I'm hearing some talk of $1.5, something like that. So it's been dramatically downsized. And then on top of that, we're losing. Every time Joe Manchin says, okay, I think I can live with this, then Kyrsten Sinema says, well, I don't know if I like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you're in a situation where it's clearly not coming together, right? Now, it may come together, and, you know, if we say it's not going to happen, I'm sure it'll happen tonight. But as of this point, I think there's a very good chance that Biden gets on that plane for Europe, goes to meet with the Pope, goes to meet with, you know, do all these different things overseas, and it's not going to be together. That is going to circle back, as you suggest, to Virginia, where Glenn Youngkin's going to be running around saying, see, the Democrats, they just can't govern. They don't know how to do this thing. Bad. Not good. And so if I was Biden, what I would do is, you know, I take the best deal I can get this afternoon or tonight, hope that it's got, you know, sufficient components in it, and announce something before he gets on the plane. I think that's good for the trip to Europe. I think it's also good for domestic political consumption. Leaving it up for grabs and flying off to Helsinki, that's a dangerous game politically. And so I think right now we are looking in the next, you know, 36 hours at a circumstance where Joe Biden is in one of the defining moments of his presidency, whether you like that or not. I think it's reality. And the best move in this moment is to achieve the most substantial thing you can get and announce it.
And brag about it. John Nichols, I'm bragging about the fact that I got John Nichols is a fine go devil. John, I've noticed new polling out today, and it escapes me whose poll it is. Morning Consult, I believe. But Democrats are far less engaged. And granted, it's more than a year out to the midterms, but Democrats are far less engaged at this point. Dems are at like 70% engagement level. 70% of Dems say they're likely to vote next year. But like 27% say, probably not. And Republicans are at 92%. Yes, I'm going to vote in the midterms. And only 4%, John, say they're not going to. There is definitely a difference in engagement. While Sinema and Manchin are failing to help Biden deliver the agenda, Republicans are delivering the big lie agenda, John. And apparently that's what the base wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shoot. Did I lose you, John?
No, you didn't lose me. I'm here.
So the big lie, we're not done telling it. It's still going on in the state of Wisconsin. While there's still a couple of minutes here, John, any final thoughts on the big lie and the engagement? It's creating tremendous engagement on the right.
Exactly. You know, I'll tell you a little story. Richard Nixon, back in the late 60s, he met George W., the dad, Bush, George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush. And then one of his aides, probably Pat Buchanan, somebody said, well, what do you think about the Bushes? And he said, you know, George H.W. Bush, nice guy, good Republican, fine, I guess. But I really like that Barbara Bush because, you know why? Aide says, why? He says, because she knows how to hate. And Nixon, a fine judge of political organization and structure, hit the heart of the matter. Republicans know how to hate. They're very, very good at getting themselves organized around hating a Democratic president, around hating on Democrats. And Democrats just aren't as good at that. And it's from a moral standpoint, it's a compliment to the Democrats, right? It's to their credit that they're better people. From a political standpoint, it's a dangerous thing because the Republicans have generated enough hate and enough lies to put themselves in a place where their minority of voters, and remember, they have a minority of voters, could be sufficient in a low turnout election. So this is why, you know, again, Biden's got to start governing, got to start showing he can govern, and if whatever it takes to get Manchin and Sinema out of the way to prevent them from screwing this thing up, it's time to do that.
John Nichols, I'd take you in a street fight with me any old day, man. We know how to fight. Liberals know how to fight. Thank you, John Nichols. Appreciate your time so much.
It's good to be with you, brother.
Come back. The 4 o'clock Happier Happy Hour. Christy Newman-Ortiz from Voces de la Frontera joins me next.
You have a builder as your president.
It's a process. It's a process. We'll get it
done. You are the enemy of the people.
I'm Satan reincarnated.